It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hawk bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between them.
Look at Radek. He dropped the gloves with Rivers. The referee or the linesman should jump in here. You can't let a guy like Rivers continue to throw punches.
Federico stolen from Reinhart. Breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting. Rebound. Recognizer scores!
Here comes Chevalier. He'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it. Head to head. And Joseph with three great right.
To Turgeon, Hall looking for 500. He shoots. He scores! Brett Hall, number 500. Tarasenko in the clear. He scores!
And now, here's your off-ice official, Jim Cromer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Monday morning edition of your Blues NHL podcast, brought to you from the lineupmedia.fm studios, home of the newest streaming platform, Yo Radio. And of course, as always, our good friends at Innovative Companies, Randy Green and his crew over there, construction, heating and cooling, electric, and of course, the plumbing team, all up and rolling now underneath one umbrella. That's innovativecompanies.com. Residential, commercial, or industrial, they've got you covered. And 35 years experience, second generation craftsman. His word means a lot to him. So if he tells you he's going to do something, folks, he's going to do it. And we're just happy to have him a part of the show. That's Randy Green with innovativecompanies.com. Well, the roller coaster continues as we head into another week into the season here. We're well past the 20 games. You've kind of caught the attention or caught the thoughts from Jamie and Darren last week of where we sit currently. I'm not quite sure, especially with the injuries now, I'm not quite sure it gets any better. I mean, I think at this juncture, we might be wishful thinking, fooling ourselves, whatever the word you might want to use. But, I will say that there are times where you see things and you go, heck, you know, we should be doing these things more often. And then you ask yourself, well, why aren't we doing them all the time? And you heard some of the comments from the guys last week, and I'm not quite sure where we go from here. But to be honest, I would think that we're going to get some more thoughts, especially over the weekend, from Jamie Rivers here any minute as soon as he calls in. We'll hear that familiar music when we know that he's here. I think some people are hoping we get a Jamie's Piss segment. I can tell you this. I've gotten to know Jamie pretty well. And while, you know, I understand they're the pros and I don't always necessarily agree 100% with everything, I am going to agree with the fact that with the guys being hurt that are hurt, the fact that, I hate to say this, that we're just not very good, then you take away some of your better players on a team that's not very good, I'm not quite sure what we were supposed to do the second night. I didn't expect us to win. I hate to say that, and that's awful. Once I realized who was out of the lineup, I mean, I don't know what you want them to do. I do want them to play hard. I do want them to pick up assignments. I want them to move their feet, and I want them to do stuff like that. I'm upset about that. I quite frankly don't think we were good enough to win. That's a whole nother conversation, obviously, but if you want to talk about the effort level, if you want to talk about things like that, and as you hear the music, it's time to get the opinion from a guy that'll let you know if he felt like they did that or not. Let's welcome in on his own Synergy Hockey Skills celebrity line, a celebrity in his own mind, of course, the one, the only, Jamie Rivers. What do you say, mister?
Oh, not too much. It's another weekend of highs and lows, apparently, and that sucks. It's hard. I wish they would end some of these weekends on the high. It makes it a lot easier to come fumbling into the Monday mornings with riding the high, but that's not the case.
Well, I will say, I had already mentioned to fans that I think, and I'm not going to speak for all of them, I think a lot of them are hoping to get a Jamie's Piss segment. I told them I don't think you're going to get one. only because we've beat the dead horse to some degree. Two, I hate to say this, but I mean, let's face it, we're not very good. And then you start adding all the injuries in, and I'm not sure. I know I'm not sure you can look at it and say they should have beat Phoenix, Arizona. I'm not sure they should have beat them. Now we can talk about the effort and the assignments and missed and things like that, and I'm sure you'll cover that as you kind of take a look at it and say, okay, here's what went right the day, you know, the day before. Here's what went wrong the next day. But I mean, I understand we're all upset, but those are legit injuries, and if those kinds of guys are injured when you're already struggling, it's going to be an uphill battle. So I'll let you kind of touch on the weekend, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. Look, the game, Rado, I have to admit that I was pleasantly surprised. I think that of the two games, I think that anybody in their right mind, if you had to pick one game to bet on the Blues winning, I think the majority of people would have bet on the Arizona game, because Colorado's a young, fast team. They're playing pretty well. They have the best line in hockey, at least arguably the best line in hockey, and they're playing in Colorado where it's high altitude and, you know, it's usually a bit of a chore for the opposition team to come in there for one game. And that didn't happen. You know, we came out and, I guess much like our last performance against Nashville on the Friday night, I mean, bodies were flying out there. It was great. The intensity level was high, and you know, we didn't have the fights right off the opening faceoff, but we still had players involved. And you know, we kind of discussed this, Scott Warman and I on TV that night, was that, you know, they don't need all the fighting all the time. I think that Craig Berube, in what he's saying and what he wants the identity of the team to be, I think that, you know, it's just to be involved physically, not be a passenger, not be standing around out there, you know, just make yourself part of the game. And I thought that the Blues did a fantastic job of making each guy part of the game against Colorado. You know, Vince Dunn gets in a fight with Ian Cole. Uncharacteristic for Vince Dunn to do that. And, you know, then, you know, a game of controlling the puck along the walls. Some crazy highlight reel type goals with the one-handed stuff. You know, Alexander Steen's goal where he knocks it out of midair with his stick, then one-hands it over the D-man stick and puts it top shelf. You know, that and the breakable goal. I mean, we've seen that a bunch already, but these are all fantastic things. And it was a gritty, gritty effort for the Blues. And Jake Allen was phenomenal. So, you know, you talk, if we end it right there, we're like, wow, that's perfect game. Now where it goes south is that we lose Alexander Steen to what looks like a concussion. You know, after he lays out Nathan MacKinnon, which, by the way, not many guys do that. And he lays him out, open ice, clean hit. Eric Johnson follows up on that in a retaliatory way and hits Steiner late and high and hits him right in the face. And so Steiner goes down with a concussion. And later in the game, we see Alex Pietrangelo get squeezed out by Gabe Landeskog, and something happens there. It looks like an arm or a wrist, because he came out of that scrum and went back to play the puck, and it looked like he broke his stick when he tried to pass the puck. And I thought to myself, wow, that looks weird. And then come to find out that it's something to do with his wrist or his hand. So let's hope that's not too serious. But, you know, if you look at that and you think, okay, well, the Blues had a great Friday night game. Now what do we expect in Arizona? And Jesus Christ, like, unfortunately, right from the get-go, the penalties that they took right away, whether it was just, you know, situational or if they were tired. You know, sometimes tired minds make tired mistakes. And I found that, you know, what, seven and a half minutes on the penalty kill, I think, in the first period alone. That's a game crusher. Back to back, Arizona had nothing but pressure the entire period. After the first period, after that whole debacle, I really felt like, wow, this is a game where if they can just hang on by their fingertips and get through a couple periods here, it would be great. But obviously that didn't happen. And then we had a plethora of mistakes and We found out quickly that without Alex Steen and Alex Pietrangelo, this team's not really that deep. And, you know, maybe some people need to look at that.
Yeah, that's a, you know, that's a nasty pill to swallow, only because we haven't been that good with them, unfortunately, this year. And I don't know, and listen, I'm being obviously, I'm just stating the fact. I think we're a way better team than we've shown. But you can't argue the fact that our record is what it is. Now, that being said, I'd like to see the team get fully healthy. I'd like to see, you know, what the Chief brings with intensity. And then here's the thing I want to say. If people think Mike Yeo wasn't an intense guy, he was. It wasn't like Mike Yeo was walking around going, hey, we don't need to hit. We don't need to pick up our men and coming down the – we don't – Mike Yeo wasn't doing that, so I don't know what people think was going on there. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, the players have assignments and they're missing them. And you know, we started a conversation last week, which I know some people had some fun with me because you guys had at me pretty good. But the truth of the matter is, my argument more than anything is, when you rewind these goals and you see these things go on, what we see at the root of the problem, not the last second when the goal goes in, that's really not what I was talking about. The 5 seconds usually leading up to the goal, there's one or two guys not moving their feet and they're caught watching the play. I don't understand this. It's getting old, to be quite honest with you. I don't know. I don't even know how that happens in today's game, because if you or I can watch it on a video review, they can too. I don't understand how this is happening.
Well, look, the truth be told, Craig Berube mentioned himself. He just says we're making stupid mistakes. And I mean, he said it just like that to the media after the game. And, you know, it's a combination of things. It's not always to do with moving your feet. That's, you know, on certain goals, on certain plays, that's a part of it. But, you know, we just take the one goal that they scored where, you know, Craig Berube breaks it down a little bit in his post game, was we have a guy coming to the bench for a line change. We have a guy going on the ice for a line change. A guy coming to the bench for a line change decides he's not going to come, goes back into play. Our other guy has to go back diving over the boards. Two guys bump into each other. It's a 3-on-1 back the other way with, thank God, Braden Shen back checks hard to create a 2-on-1, but still, pass goes all the way across, and then Cousins, you know, buries a shot on the glove side on Chad Johnson. But that's not the first time those things have happened. We can talk to her blue in the face about the too many men penalties and things like that, but those things happen from time to time, but when they happen on a regular basis, it means that not everybody's focused on what's going on. It's like, you know, you're surprised by a change or a guy that jumps on too soon is not paying attention to where the other guy is on the ice and really coming off, or you don't know who you have on the next shift. It's just all this information gets passed out on the bench by the coaching staff and usually by the players, who kind of repeat who's up, who's got who. And all this is a situation where somebody either forgets quickly or isn't paying attention. And two guys jump on the ice for the same guy coming off, and bam, you have a too many men penalty. And that's just highlighting one small thing. But there's lots of plays that are happening where, you know, guys just look like they're not sure about what they're doing, or they're going to places where they just shouldn't be. And you have to quote Craig Berube again, guys just making stupid mistakes. And I don't know how you fix that, Cromes. I mean, you got hours and hours that you can work on video. You have coaching, you have practice, you have all sorts of stuff you can do. You can bench guys, you can sick guys, you can whatever. But at the end of the day, if players just don't get it, then they don't get it. And some players, and I'm not saying the Blues have guys with that aren't, you know, don't have good hockey IQ. I don't know well enough to have that discussion about that. But I do know that that's a big part of it. Like, some guys just, you know, maybe aren't hockey smart, and they keep making these decisions. And usually that's a good sign to tell you that, wow, like, we need to move on, because we can work with skill. We can talk about positions. But if a guy just consistently doesn't get what we're trying to do overall, then we got a problem here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about it, and they were like, well, it's time. Well, and I was having a conversation with a friend, but we've gotten numerous comments on our posts that we put on social media and things like that. And I pay attention to all the other conversations that are going on in the fan groups and things like that. And the most common theme amongst fans right now is, well, it's time to start benching these guys. And I was talking to my buddy about it. Well, Coach Henson, he was going to join us today, but he had something come up at McKendree last minute. He had to go in this morning. But he and I were talking about it, and I just said, the problem is, and as I see it, that'd be fine if it was one guy consistently making the same mistake, but it's not. It's multiple guys. How do you bench seven guys?
Well, that, yes, you're absolutely right. But part two of that answer is, where are you getting the guys to replace them? Like, we're showing right now that we're not tremendously deep for whatever reason. I know we have guys in the minors, and we can talk about Costin and Kyrou and all these guys, but they're going to come up, and they're still going to have a big learning curve as well, especially a guy like Costin, who is still learning mathematical hockey and North American hockey. But I guess my biggest comment is, we're seeing right now just how thin we are with Schwartz out, with Gunnarsson out, now with Steen out, Petro out. Like, we're really not that deep to just start saying, hey, we're going to bench this guy, player X. And then you put in who? I mean, I know you just say, oh, well, just put in somebody who's going to try. Well, I get it. I understand. You can do that from time to time. But overall, like, your guys who are paid the most money are supposed to be the ones that can win you hockey games. And at some point, you got to play those guys. And even if you just want to get value out of those guys, you got to play them. So this is a really tough situation that the Blues are in right now. Losing is one thing. It happens, you know, and it happens quite often so far this year. And then players that aren't able to perform properly, or at least up to the standard. I mean, Army really has nowhere to go with this right now.
Well, I can only imagine the hair pulling that's going on, because, you know, to kind of take the point further, you answered it perfectly. It isn't that easy. I mean, we said last week, and I know people want to trade, or they want trades or whatever. Well, trades aren't like they used to be. It's like, I just want this guy out of here. So that's just not how it works. So I guess you're kind of answering one of our listeners' questions, and that's Deneen Preston's. So I guess that her question does kind of rephrase it to you, kind of almost putting you on the spot. Would you bring up someone like Kyrou or Costin for a game or two just to change the pace? Now, I want to say this. One of them might have to come up anyway because of the injuries, but would you do it and hope that it sparks us or makes a change?
Look, I think, obviously, like you just said, one of them's coming up, I think, regardless, just based upon the injury situation that we have, unless Steiner comes back before the weekend, or before Wednesday anyways. But it's a tough call. It's a tough call because you have a situation right now where team isn't doing good. I'm not saying, and trust me, I'm not saying that it's a bad environment down there by any means, because everything I've received back is that the guys are like each other, and that, you know, they understand the situation and they want to do better. But it's still not a great environment to bring young guys in and put that much pressure on them. You know, like, usually when you bring a young guy into the fold, you'd like them to be an accent piece that you can gradually give more responsibility to, that the rest of the team that surrounds them are safe, dependable hockey players that will make their jobs easier and certainly the transition easier. To do it this way, and I've seen this a lot, where you just throw a young guy into the fire, it can ruin him, because life comes at you fast when you're on the ice in the NHL. And if for some reason your team is missing assignments, or we just talked about making these mistakes, well, that's twice as taxing on a young guy. That's going to single him out more than ever, because other teams are going to fly around. What are we going to talk about? Well, there was Kyrou, you know, hypothetically, there was Kyrou, -2 last night. Okay, well, but did he really have anything to do on the play? You know, and then you're looking to break down plays in their entirety just to justify or to save this kid's confidence. So it's tough. It's almost like, I guess I use this analogy sometimes, is throwing a kid into the water to learn how to swim, but it's on a sinking ship. So that kid better learn how to swim in a hurry or he's screwed, right? So
yeah.
That's kind of the way I look at it. It's a double-edged sword. I think you bring him in, give him a couple games, get him back down there. Kyrou's got, 8 points the last six games in the minors. You don't want that to go to the wayside. Throw a guy in there, especially with injuries, but we have to be very, very careful how we introduce these players to the NHL.
You know, I'm going to stay on that topic only because I want to get your thoughts on Kost. And I've been paying attention. He seems to be adapting to the game, though, only because I know we've talked about, you know, what a talented player he can be. Now, obviously, he needed some seasoning, and that's why he's down there. I know everybody thought he was going to come over here and be this right-away player, but he's getting that. I've been impressed with the physicality he's been playing with and the edge he's been playing with. Are you – I'm not going to say shocked by that because I think that was the one thing we all kind of thought, But the reality of it is if you pay attention to what he's doing down there, he's playing with an edge. He's playing physical. He's going to the net. I mean, he's doing these types of things that you would like to see from a player from over there translate into their game over here.
Yeah, no, he certainly, he's jumped in a couple of times to stick up for teammates. And, you know, whether fighting's a part of the game or not, it's still a big part of the culture or the acceptance to your team and your teammates. And so that's positive. He's an offensively talented guy. He does a great job with the puck. He's still learning responsibilities away from the puck. He's still learning that, you know, if you turn the puck over in the offensive zone, it's not, 20% effort to get back to your end. It's 100% effort. I guess the best way to describe it is, he doesn't quite have a handle on the 200-foot game yet. And that gets exposed from time to time in the American Hockey League. So one would have to imagine that he would probably get exposed a little more even at the NHL level. Now, however, I do think he's a guy that you do probably have to give a cup of coffee to this year at some point to get him in here and see, if he can work those skills, his size, his speed, all those abilities, if he can do that at the NHL level and speed, then, how good is he? And then how much time do we want to put into this guy to develop him into that 200-foot NHL player? But he's on the right track, and he certainly has a good attitude towards being a team guy. It's just a matter of bearing down and playing, a complete game.
Good. Okay, so Sarah asks – and you guys have kind of beat this to death. I don't know what else you could add to it, but, is there one thing the Blues can do besides pull themselves together? The reason I'm asking is because she did suggest besides them getting Kimbled. But I think you guys have actually mentioned them going out and getting Kimbled. But, at this juncture, have you ad nauseum said, yeah, they can go out, they can hang out, they can do this, they can do that? I mean, are we past that now and it's just, sooner or later, you got to look in the mirror?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if they haven't gone out and gotten completely Kimbled at this point as a team, then, they're never going to do it. They've had a couple of good road trips to pull together as a team to get to know each other, to go to bat for each other. I think that time, at this point of the season, when the Christmas holidays are bearing down upon you, I think it's too late to worry about trying to come together as a team. So these guys, look, what's frustrating about it is, we've mentioned this before, individually, when you look at each player in the lineup, you look at it and go, you know what? I like this guy. I think he can play. I think he can play. I think he's a player. And you keep going down. For whatever reason, all these people that are players or good players or guys we like, they're not working well as a unit together. And I don't know what the answer is to that. It just happens sometimes, It's kind of like putting together a meal that has all the finest ingredients, but it just tastes like shit. And you're like, I don't care what you put in there. That doesn't taste good, right? And sometimes it doesn't make sense. But unfortunately, that's just the way it is right now. And I'm telling you, I'm going to harp on this again, is the injuries to some of these key players don't make it easier. Regardless of what anybody wants to say about Steen or Petrangelo or even Schwartz this year for not playing up to potential, or Gunnarsson, that I've admitted myself that I called him a little vanilla in the past. These are guys that we're missing in the lineup. These are guys that have to be part of the solution. And right now you don't even have access to them. So Craig Berube's got a team that he's taken over. For whatever reason, they weren't grasping the concept under Mike Yeo. For whatever reason so far, they've hit or miss. Was a fantastic team to watch play. And when they're a miss, it's very difficult to watch the entire game. So I don't know. We're in a situation where it's very, very difficult right now to look at a solution unless you have all the guys together and then everybody performs to their ability. And then maybe Doug Armstrong can make a deal or find a guy, a new location that can help the player, help the team, help the future of the franchise. I don't know. It's a really tough spot right now.
Yeah. The reality though is for that, it'd be different if it was one guy. Like, everybody wants to beat on Bouwmeester, and that's fine. You can beat on him if that's your gig. And, I like to beat on guys too, if I get pissed off about a guy. But the reality of it is, it's an equal opportunity deal here. It's somebody different missing assignment. Like, I'm not throwing this guy on the bus because I love him, but, Fabry plays great two or three games in a row and then has a game where he's just not good at all, and it kills us. That's an example of a guy that played really, really well, and then all of a sudden one night he just is, for whatever reason. And it seems like that's the type of thing that ultimately is what's going on here. And with everybody else not playing better, they're not picking up that guy that has the off night. That's what I'm seeing.
That's it exactly. That's it exactly right there is. And that kind of what you just said kind of is an umbrella to me talking about young guys too, is, if the young guy's on the ice and two of his line mates have a bad night, well, guess what? That line's going to look like crap. And once again, you're looking at it going, well, he may not have been all that bad, but his line mates were bad, or he was good and they were bad. And it's like, right now it ain't working. And I forgot to mention earlier, and I don't know how I forgot, but I did, that, Robbie Fabry goes out with an injury against Arizona, and that didn't look good. Hunched over, holding his arm the whole way. Like, and some of his mistakes, Jim, or his inconsistencies, quite honestly, are strictly because he hasn't played in 2 years. And it takes time. The NHL is the best league in the world for a reason. But once again, if Robbie Fabry is trying to find his game and the team around him is having a hard time finding their game, then how can you possibly continue to get better if it's always a struggle? And now he's hurt again, upper body injury this time. But, who's to know when he comes back, first of all, what kind of shape he comes back in, and how effective he could be again. So this is going from bad to worse for these guys. And I'm not even talking about their play on the ice. That's a whole separate thing. But their roster issues right now are probably as bad as they've been in I don't even know how many years.
Well, and that's kind of the reason I brought that up. I want to say this. I like Robbie Fabry. I think he's a good player. I think he's a really good hockey player. I don't know that he's great. I don't know that he's a superstar, obviously. He's a good hockey player. And that was kind of my point. One day you're watching him play and you're like, man, look how good Robbie Fabry's playing. Look what a big part of this team he is. And then the next night you watch two goals and you're like going, what's he doing? And then you're like, okay, well, he had a bag. And then David Perron plays great. And then the next game, he tries some stupid dump pass off the boards behind him, and the next thing you know, it's going the other way and in our net, and you're going, boy, last night he was the best player on the ice for us. And now tonight, what are we doing? It's not just Jay Bouwmeester, folks, okay? I don't know how to say this, but it's equal opportunity here. Everybody's taking turns, and and that's what I was getting at is, that happens to every team. Make no mistake about it. Every team has a guy that has a bad night. The difference is the other guys pick up the slack a little bit. And the goalie makes a big, you know, and we got some of that too, where the goalie was picking up the guys and then we didn't do anything. And it's just, I don't know. That's why I don't know that there is an answer. I don't know what Doug Armstrong does. I mean, I guess you do what a GM does. Tried and true things in the past, make a trade, fire a coach. I mean, go down the checklist. What do you do? Because you can't just ship them all out and ship a bunch in. I mean, this is it's almost like, get ready. This is going to be a rough year.
Well, the only thing left realistically for Doug Armstrong to do, and I don't think it's a big secret. It's not like I'm going to unveil the secret sauce here, but he's gone through his coach. He went through his roster this summer. And so all the additions, all the subtractions, the young guys that came in, whatever you want to talk about, everything was put into place with the idea of being successful. None of that has worked. And what do you do now? Now, in today's NHL, the only thing to do is to start just wholesaling players. And, you know, you've got to rebuild. And it sounds crazy because everybody's like, rebuild? Like, we just signed Bozak to a big deal and Perron to a big deal. And we brought in O'Reilly. We got rid of some dead weight. We brought in – we were going for it, man. I understand. And I was of the same opinion in July and August that, yes, we're going for it. We're not far enough. Well, I think we're realizing quickly that we were wrong. And it sucks, but that's where we're at. And so you can do two things. You can, one, hang on for dear life and hope that one day you just wake up and it miraculously changes itself and go through the pits of hell of what's going on now. And Doug Armstrong, quite honestly, can put himself in a situation where he risks it all, because if the team doesn't change and respond, then I'm sure that his name will be tossed around as looking for another job. Now, option two is to be proactive and get out in front of some of these things and try to make some deals. And yes, there's some contracts you'll probably have to keep unless you can really work your magic and retool contracts, eat salary, this, that, the other, whatever you got to do. But at the end of the day, that's all there is to it. There's one, staying pat, and everybody risks losing their job. Two is to go out and get ahead of it and try to rebuild, try to get in some young guys, some youth, get a coach in here that's going to be your full-time guy, and now you have to try and move forward with a new team. That's really all that you can do.
Well, Blue Note Backer asks you, can you get behind a hashtag Loose for Hughes? And do you think this organization could do it? So basically what he's asking is, you know, and I hate the word tank, but can you try to put your – I mean, are we at the juncture now where it's probably best for us to try to get the number one overall pick and get Mr. Hughes?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. You know, I just I could never bring myself to be a GM, a coach, a player, a trainer, a stick boy, you name it, as part of an organization that is quote unquote tanking. I know that in some situations it's the best possible thing to do. And some teams have ended up being very successful by not being good. But let's not forget that it is a lottery here.
Yes.
It's not like you're just guaranteed first pick anymore. And teams suspiciously kind of ended up last in years past before to guarantee themselves that number one pick. But here's the problem is, one, you're not guaranteed the number one pick. Yes, your odds are greater, but you're not guaranteed the number one pick. Ask a few of the teams in the last couple of years that ended up second or third in the picking order rather than one, like they want it to be. And two, you're not guaranteed that the player you pick, even if he's first overall, you're not guaranteed he's going to be able to come in and change your franchise around. You know, the Austin Matthews, the Connor McDavids of the world, they're special. And, you know, look at a kid like Nolan Patrick in Philadelphia. What was he, second overall? And what, you know, he's been a good player, but do you really hear about him?
No.
Not really, right? So now you maybe tank or, you know, lose, creatively lose, and you end up with a player that you think is great, and it's kind of like, oh, crap, maybe we didn't get the right guy. So it was tough. I mean, I know that people will sit there and go, well, this is projected to be one of the best draft classes in recent history. True, but there's no guarantees in life. There's no guarantees with hockey. There's injuries that just don't fit in. There's coaches that don't like players. It is what it is. And in my opinion, you're better off to continue with your team with what you have. Certainly generate draft picks, and you hope that a larger percentage of your draft picks end up being players that can play for your team in the future. And that's just kind of how you have to do it.
Paul Schmitz takes it, is looking, trying to find something positive, and he's looking for some help here. It sounds to me like he's wanting to vote for a Blue for the All-Star game, but he's finding it tough to do so. I answered him back that we would cover it, and I very simply said, is Ryan O'Reilly not deserving of an All-Star nod? I would say he deserved my vote if I was giving a vote for an All-Star representative from the Blues.
Yeah, he's hands down the Blues representative. I mean, if he doesn't get picked for the All-Star game, there's something wrong. I mean, I know Vladdy has played much better of late, and I have nothing negative to say about Vladdy. I really don't. I think that he has turned up the effort level. He has done a lot more, 200-foot game, and he's scoring goals, and he's making plays. But I just think that overall expectations of Vladdy has 8 goals now, I believe.
Yep.
If we're going to put that in context, so does Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson's played 10 games. Mm-hmm. And I'm not starting that whole big shitstorm, but I'm just saying, right? Like, Tyler Seguin has 8 goals. So does Tom Wilson. So, Vladdy should have 14, 15 goals by now, if not 20, to be up there with the big boys. He's playing well, but I still think Ryan O'Reilly is, from the start of the season through every game so far, he's worked his ass off. He's been great in the face-off circle. He's been great in every way. So to me, he's the hands-down first pick for the All-Star team out of St. Louis.
Yeah, you know you're not going to get through this episode without discussing Tom Wilson. So we'll save that for the end, though.
Well, I mean, hey, we can hit that one head on. It doesn't bother me. I mean, guy.
We will. Yep. We will, because it was a shit show again on social media. But I got one more thing follow up Blues wise for you from the questions. You touched on it, and we had some other questions, so I wanted to make sure we got to them first. But I want to circle back to something you mentioned, only because I'm seeing this more and more and more, and I know where it's coming from. It's coming from listeners and fans that are no different than you and Kimby. I mean, you've sat in this studio now for how many weeks, and you're like, how many more times can we say this and this and this? So fans do what fans do, right? We're like, okay, wait a minute. We're not you guys, but we're not dumb either. So they changed the roster. They brought in these good players. They've done all this stuff. So something's got to be wrong. Well, naturally, What have they done? Okay, well, it's the captain, okay? Or it's this or it's that. Well, we keep going, and then we have smart people telling us, no, that's not it. No, that's not it, right? Well, okay, now it's turned to there's got to be a problem in the locker room. We've heard rumblings that the locker room's divided. It's obvious nobody likes Tarasenko. Listen to some of the things the chief says. Listen to some of the things Armstrong says. And if you read between the lines, it's pretty evident who he's talking about. He's talking about Tarasenko. He's the only name not mentioned in this quote. It's got to be him, or it's got to be Steen, Petrangelo. That whole thing's resurfacing. So now we're on to the locker room. You mentioned earlier that by all reports you're getting, and I know you're not sitting here saying you're in there and you know for sure, but you want to address that just a little bit?
Yeah. Look, first of all, the Steen Petrangelo thing from times past, I don't know if they ever truly had a risk or not. However, I do know that working with both of those individuals this summer, who they work in conjunction with each other at the same time, I tell you what, if they had a riff, or if they do have a riff, they are Oscar award winners, because you cannot tell. These guys talk, they text, they hang out, so that riff that was brought up last year or whatever, whenever it was, I don't think that ever existed. I don't think it exists right now. As far as anything else goes on, look, everybody now is becoming, I don't say conspiracy theorists, because it's not exactly that, but it's kind of like that. Now they're just looking for, some other deeper rooted problem with the Blues that, the naked eye can't see. And it's like, Tarasenko's not a bad guy. He's not who they're talking about if they exclude his name. He's not the guy that, that Craig Berube and Army are all trying to needle in their pressers. It's a group of guys right now. And it's, the funny thing is, Cromes, it's not always the same group of guys. So that's the kicker, is it would be great if you one, two, three, four guys even. And then you'd be like, this for sure, these guys have to go. But it's not always the same guys. And like you just nailed it earlier. That's what you said. It's on any given night, it's another guy. It's somebody else making the mistake, or it looks like they don't aren't aware what's going on, or maybe they don't care enough. It's usually never the same guys night in, night out. And yeah, there's a couple of guys who fall in that category maybe a little more often than others, but to my knowledge, I don't hear anything negative coming out of the locker room. I've had the privilege of being in there from time to time throughout this season, and I have not seen anything that would indicate that locker room.
Well, that's good to hear. And again, I know you always say this, was saying there could be things that you are unaware of, but you're pretty well in tune, I would say, with things. But I'm just a little disclaimer there. I just want to make sure people know, where we stand. We time to talk about Tom Wilson. Now, I know you've seen
my buddy.
I know you've seen the video, and I started, obviously, and once again, our friends took a few pot shots at you guys, if you watch some of their tweets. Of course, they didn't tag us in them. But,
I don't watch any of their tweets. I don't watch their tweets anymore. I think I got them blocked. I have no time in my life to deal with bullshit.
Well, the reality of it is, once again, we're hearing from I call him the new fan. That's what I call him, the new fan. This was just so ridiculous. And I'm just sitting here watching this going, the number one word that I hear about this hit is that it was unnecessary. And listen, that's the number one thing that I disagree with. It is 100% necessary. You know why? Because that's who he is. There are lots of guys in this league that try to nudge guys, bump guys, stir shit. That's what he is. Do you think for 1 minute, let me say this, we don't have that guy and we need him. I'm going to say that, number one. Number two, that thing that happened with him happens all the time. And I'm going to say this. I don't know that the guy was embellishing. Maybe it was just an uncomfortable situation, the way he clipped him or whatever. But I mean, gee, many Christmas. If that's what we're talking about now, I don't even want to watch anymore. I'm just being honest.
Well, here's my take on it, is a couple of different directions to go in. Or a couple of different thoughts, anyways. And one, Tom Wilson, let's just set the table here. He's 6'4", 225, 230. And the guy he hit was like 5'9", 165, maybe 170. So you're correct in those hits, those little bumps happen.
Are you going to call that a hit? Hang on, I want to stop here for a second. Was that a hit?
The problem is that you had a very... What's that?
I said, I got to stop you for 1 second. Are we going to call this thing a hit?
No, I just called it a little bump.
Okay, I'm making sure, because I'm just making sure. That really wasn't directed at you. That was directed at everyone else. I can't believe this was called a hit.
Well, I called it a bump. Unfortunately, it was like an 18-wheeler bumping into a Mini Cooper. And, you know, that's never going to be pretty at any level. And now, here's the kicker to it, okay, is I'm a Tom Wilson fan. Obviously, I've brought his name up in the past. I just brought it up to where he's got 8 goals in 10 games, and everybody badmouthed the Capitals and him for that contract that he receives. They're like, oh, my God, he can't even play. Well, guess what? You know, he's matched Sagan and Tarasenko, and I could go down the list of guys that he's either tied with or ahead of in only 10 games played this year. He's obviously not too bad, and he even scored a shorthanded goal the other night, which is not easy to do for any level of hockey player in the NHL. So, but here's the problem with this bump is if you knew you are on probation, right? Like, let's say you had a sentence for something criminal, let's say armed robbery. Okay, Cromes, would you be out roaming with a handgun on you? No intention of using it, but would you be doing that if you were already just got out of jail for armed robbery? Probably not. My thoughts for Tom Wilson is, why does he bother doing that, right? Like, it's not a big deal, but he just got off of, you know, one of the biggest suspensions in recent NHL history. He had a big to-do about Gary Bettman held strong. Then he had the arbitrator lower it, and it lowered it 2 games less, and he had to get salary back. Like, there's no more spotlight on a player for suspension than him in the last, I don't even know how long. And he sees this guy skating out, and between the time the guy gets rid of the puck and the time he gets bumped, there's plenty of time. And Wilson could have moved over 6 inches and not bumped into this guy. And I just, that's where I'm like, I don't think it was suspension worthy. But as soon as it happened, I said, he's going to get 2 games for that. Watch. And the only reason I said that is because he's got this repeat offender tag, which he's created himself. And that would have been 4 incidents in the last, calendar year, which is never good. And now he could have avoided it, Jim. You can say it's ticky-tacky bullshit. You're right. There's no argument here. But you can't argue with me saying that he couldn't have. He could have just stepped around the guy easily and still gotten to where he wanted to go. And I just think that that's what Tom Wilson has to realize is now he's a marked man. And every time there's a hit, it's going to be showed 10,000 times. And it's already happened on other clean hits that he's had this year following his suspension. He comes back and he rocks a guy, and people are slowing it down and frame by frame seeing if there's even a little hint of head contact. So when you're under the microscope that much, in my opinion, you do whatever you can to avoid little ticky-tacky things like that and then still play your game the way you want to play it, which is hard and mean and nasty in the corners in front of the net and at other times. But that little bullshit, he just needs to stay away from it.
Well, listen, I don't mean like he couldn't have avoided it. That's not my point. My point is, I mean, that's how the guy plays the game. And as we say this, and the reason I'm saying that, I'm watching a video as we do this. It's an incredible video that the hockey gods shared on Twitter. It's a montage of the abuse. And I'm going to use the word abuse. I'm going to share it right now. So if anybody thinks I just retweeted it. The absolute abuse that Connor McDavid takes on a shift by shift basis.
Oh, I know. I saw
okay.
that one.
Okay. So here's my thing. Okay. Are you telling me that little thing that he did is any more egregious than this? Because I'm telling you right now, I got a bigger problem with this. Because I would have
you're not wrong.
I would have thought we learned a long time ago when we had great players in the league. You know, I know you've loved hockey since the day you came out of the womb, the whole bit. Mario Lemieux was my favorite player. Okay. I don't know why. It was just different. Everybody liked Gretzky. I like Lemieux. He was a bigger dude, right? And he stood in the tight spots and he did everything. And guys just used to beat him to death with their sticks in the back. And what did the guy wind up having? A lot of back problems, right? Watch this video and watch how many cross checks this guy takes. Some of them are just silly. ridiculous cross checks. And I mean, he's nowhere near the puck. Puck's not anywhere near him. And he just gets beat on and beat on and beat on. And that's kind of my but guess what? Here's my thing. This is what they do. That's my point. It's like, okay. So, again, I don't know. I just have a problem with it. I understand.
What you're describing here, though, Chromes, is you're describing two separate things, right? Because, and I understand your passion for both subjects, but you're describing the one where Connor McDavid is getting abused by various players in various games, which is great. He should be protected. He should have somebody looking out for him. All of the things we've talked about. However, the problem with the other situation is it's the same guy in every moment. Like Tom Wilson, it's the same guy every hit, every suspension, every time. So that's where, and I'm not even calling that a hit. Like I said, I call it a bump. But he, Tom Wilson, the individual, has to realize that, you know what, some of this little shit, I need to just not put myself in that situation because he's got to know that, you know, he's got to feel like Al Capone did before they took him down, where every house he walks into is being filmed, every phone he's on is being bugged. I mean, he's got to know that that's where he's at. So do himself a favor and play the game to get the big hits, to get the goals, to do what he has to do. But the little shit like that, like, even though it's just petty, he's got a record right now and a hefty one. He just needs to stay out of that shit. That's all.
You know, on the flip side of it, though, and I ask this honestly to you, you know, the Washington Capitals gave him a bunch of money to be who he is, all right? So the question is if all of a sudden all these things that he does, which, let's be frank, at the end of the day, the reason he does them is because, as you've said on the show numerous times and Kimball has said and anybody that's played the game says, you better know where he is at all times, so you play the game a little bit different when Tom Wilson's on the ice. Well, if all of a sudden he quits all this stuff, doesn't the game get a little freer for those guys if he's not doing what he was paid to do?
It's not that he has to quit at all, Chromes. And you know, I'm go over again here, is he needs to make those hits. He needs to make, you know, the good forechecking hits, the battling, the front net, the net front presence. He needs to do all those things. What he needs to be aware of is the little ticky-tack plays like that where he's skating and just sort of leans into the guy from behind. It's not really much, but he crushes him, or looks like he does anyways. That's what he just has to be cognizant of. And the Capitals don't want him to change his game, but the Capitals don't win that hockey game because Tom Wilson barely bumped into this guy and put him to the ground. That doesn't make a victory for the team. What he does when he really is playing the game, that's what wins games. And the Capitals, like you said, they gave him all this money, but they don't necessarily want to just give him that money so he can pay the NHL or the players' emergency fund all of that $5 million a year in suspensions.
Yeah.
You know, still want to have this guy as part of your roster. That's why you signed him for that money in that many years, is you want him to be doing what makes him successful. Little shit that's irrelevant to the game.
Yeah, I understand all that. I just, again, I don't that thing the other night meant zero to me. And the fact that everybody was like, well, he could have avoided, I don't care. Again, for his own sanity and for the fact of, you know, they're watching you, yeah, don't do it, I guess. But don't tell me
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but don't tell me don't do it because it's egregious, because it wasn't. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, I just, whatever. It happens all the time. All the time.
No, I know. But I think it goes back to my initial statement of it was an 18-wheeler bumping into a Mini Cooper. Yeah. And that's kind of what you end up with there. And it looks bad. It looks, you know, worse than it may be. But, you know, and just like you said there, you just got to try to avoid some of that little stuff and continue to play his power game, because obviously he's making a big difference in that lineup.
Yeah, last question before you go on the subject of plays like that. I'm just wondering, are we going to get to a point in the league where, kind of like they've done in football and other things, that when a guy receives a major like that and is kicked out of the game, I mean, that's a big call. And we're talking about things like targeting the head and things like that. You know, are we at a point now where they're going to check those on a video to make sure, because the game is so fast? Like, for instance, after watching the replay, would you have kicked him out of the game, or would you have said, look, it was an interference, you know, you're going to the box for 2 minutes?
Yeah, I personally would not have kicked him out of the game. I didn't think it was vicious enough to warrant a match penalty. Now, you know, I believe, like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and people can correct me because I don't know all the details to it, but I believe that player stayed in the game for New Jersey. I mean, he may have went off the ice temporarily, but he finished the game. So, obviously, at that point, it wasn't as serious as it may have looked. So, you know, to me, it wouldn't have been a match penalty. But once again, as much as the referees will say, we don't take into consideration a guy's reputation. Every play is isolated. Well, no, it's not. It's not. Because if Connor McDavid skates down the slot like that and nudges into that player, they may not even call a penalty. They may just call it incidental contact. And Wilson does it, though, when he gets a match penalty. So trust me that there's no such thing as isolated incidents when it comes to this type of behavior or this type of stuff that they're penalizing nowadays in the NHL.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious if you thought we were heading there. And, you know,
we're not, but I can tell you that we are headed. We're already there. People may not even realize it, but we're already at the point where every big hit every night is being looked at multiple times. Even if the referee doesn't call a penalty, those hits are being looked at. And it's almost like every time there's a big hit in a game, people kind of hold their breath because they're like, oh, is this going to be a penalty? Is this going to be a suspension? You know, is this going to have supplemental discipline after the game? It's kind of a weird way to watch a hockey game now. I can't imagine playing where every time you step up on somebody and even you level them, even if they get up and they skate away, now you got to be thinking in the back of your head, well, damn, did I clip his ear? Did I get his chin? Did I nick his nose? Like, if so, I'm suspended. So I don't know. I think the apprehension to play the game the way it's supposed to be played kind of makes things a little more dangerous out there. But what do I know? I mean, I'm no doctor, so
yeah,
I'm sure I'll get lit up for that. But it's taking some of the intensity, some of the fun of watching a game out of it, where good hits are good hits. But when we scrutinize clean body checks all the time, just because, you know, now every hit can be looked at 10 million different ways, then I think we're headed for a part of, or a way of the NHL that I'm not real thrilled about.
Yeah, I just, the word I don't like is unnecessary, because there's probably, if you watch a hockey game in 60 minutes, I think you'd lose count of the number of hits that you could then term unnecessary. Every time a defenseman or a forward passes a puck and then gets hit a second and a half later, that'd be unnecessary. I mean, what are you doing it for?
Why, you know what pisses me off,
right? Why do they hit those guys
then? What pisses me off is, you know, we want to sit here and we want to highlight Tom Wilson's and this and that and the little bump from behind or whatever that thing was. But then, you know, how much did you really hear nationwide about the Eric Johnson hit on Alex Steen? Like, you want to talk about a bullshit. Like, Steiner makes a pass or makes a play, and you can count one, two, before there's contact, and then the contact is he literally drills right into Steiner's face. And nothing. Crickets, almost. Yeah, he got a penalty, and yes, but it was examined. But why was there not even a phone call to Eric Johnson from the league on that? Like, you want to talk about hits that you can avoid. When there's 2 second gap between you and that player, it's not that you can necessarily avoid the hit, but you certainly don't have to target the head. And he did. He absolutely did. And it was in retaliation. Standing up Nathan MacKinnon with a clean body check. And then he was pissed off about, my best player just got run over, so I'm going to go take it out on Steiner. And he hit him late and hit him right in the head. But we don't hear much about that, do we?
No, we don't. And, you know,
that's my problem with it.
Well, and that, and again, I've said it once, I'll say it again. There are just 1,000 hits that happen every night that are a second and a half after the play. One of yeah, listen, every Blues fan loved when Ryan Reeves would run around and hammer guys after they released the puck. And was that not necessary? I mean, there's a reason why guys do it. Okay, they're letting guys know.
There's still a fine line between timing of finishing the hit and then it being late, and then certainly targeting the head. You know, that's a little different.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I that was what my problem was with this particular situation. And nobody got hit in the head. Nobody, you know, it was unnecessary. I'm like, okay, if you want to say it's unnecessary because he personally shouldn't, then that's fine. But the reality of it is, I don't know. I mean, you know what's funny is, was it about three or four games ago when the Blues played really physical against Nashville? How about the hit Pietrangelo put on their opposing player? Nobody said a word about that.
No.
I mean, you talk about going through a guy, his skates come completely off the ice. He does make contact with the head, and nobody said a word about it. It was great. I'm like, whatever. I mean,
Even the fact that we're talking about it is what I'm highlighting.
Right? Yeah.
Basically, even good hits that are, you know, hockey plays that nobody gets hurt on, like you just said, if you watch it over, you know, he does come off his feet. He does make a little bit of contact with the head. So technically, that could have been suspendable. That's where I think it gets a little bit out of whack.
Well, I started to go back and record that hit and send it out and say, okay, guys, I mean, I know we were bitching about other players and doing it. I mean, what about this? But I'm not going to do that. I mean, it's just stupid. But
no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
Jesus, we got enough going on here. We don't need any more attention towards.
But I did think it was funny. I did think it was great because everybody's going, did you see the hit? And I'm like, yeah, I saw it. You know what I saw? I saw that if that would have happened to us, it would have been Twitter would have been blown up with people going, he left his feet and he made contact with our guy's head. And I'm just like, oh, well, okay. And again, I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying that there's always a double standard. We've had all kinds of players wear the blue note that have done far worse. And it's just, hey, whatever. I get it. Life goes on. Life goes on. Before you get out of here, obviously you come to us on the SynergyHockeySkills.com celebrity line. Any updates on anything with Synergy Hockey? I know you've released your camps and people are probably picking up those gift certificates for stocking stuffers.
Yeah, hopefully they are anyways. we're getting some people signing up. We're going to get some material out to the rinks this week for people to take a look and grab a flyer. But the easiest way to do it is to get online, SynergyHockeySkills.com. It should be right on the home page. If not, you go under camps. And it'll be right under the holiday camps sign. And click on that and register. We've got two of them coming up, one at the Afton Ice Rink, which will be 2 days, and one at the Mills Ice Center. That'll be a one-day clinic. So please get out there, click on that. And like I said, stocking stuffers for the kids, and we all have a lot of fun while we're up there.
Last thing, you got a lot of props from people. They're loving you on the TV there, bud. And I'm not quite sure it's your looks. It's not your looks. I think it's your analysis. But let's get that straight.
Well, look, it's no secret. I enjoy getting on there. You know, Scott Warman is an awesome guy to work with. The whole crew at Fox Sports Midwest is awesome. It's always fun and a privilege to get in there and keep Bernie's seat warm, and he was stepping in for Panger this weekend. It's always fun to do it that way, but I enjoy it. I wish it could have been 2 wins. It would have been nice to broadcast that. Love going on there, and I appreciate people saying nice things about me.
Well, it's better than them saying bad things about you. So
exactly. Always... I'll take it.
All right. Well, we'll have you in studio Thursday. Kimby's got an odd work schedule. So, Rex, I think we're going to try to give him a buzz and just get him in here for a few minutes and get his thoughts. It's always entertaining. But I'll plan on seeing you in studio on Thursday, and take care of yourself. Hopefully we get a win on Wednesday night. We can have a nice, fun show on Thursday.
That's what I'm talking about, buddy. So hopefully we do, but thanks for having me, and we will chat on Thursday.
Well, great stuff as always from you, my friend. I'll see you then. Take care. All right, that is Jamie Rivers, the one and only, and doing it only as he can. Good stuff as always. I love to get his take. You know, he does. You know, you're never going to hear him say things that are out of line. He's not gonna cross the line. He's a guy that's been in the locker room as a player, as a coach, as a friend, as a team, as a member of the organization, things of that nature. He's not going to take cheap shots at anybody, but I think Jamie's proven over time on the show that, you know, he calls it like he sees it. That doesn't mean you always got to agree with him, because I think there's times, me included, we want blood because we're not happy. Guys that have been in there understand that it's not as easy, but they also understand that fans want blood to some degree. You know, to hear him talk about the locker room, I thought was important. I don't know. This whole thing, I can't put a finger on it. I understand neither can you, neither can shoot. If, you know, there's guys getting paid a whole lot of money to put a finger on this thing and they can't do it. It's just as a bad deal. And I just, like he said, I mean, what are we going to hope? We just wake up one day and it's fixed. But on top of that, add in the injuries and now we got a real problem. So I don't know where we go from here. I just feel like a broken record, to be quite honest with you guys. It's what it feels like. I know that. I'm sure as a fan that's what it feels like. And if you are a Blues fan for as long as I have been and some of you have been, the whole thing seems like a broken record to some degree. But, you know, we're fans. We love them. We want them to do well. And no matter how upset we get, no matter how many bad things we say and how many things we throw at the television set, our love for the Blues will continue, even though it sure seems like a love-hate thing. But I want to thank Jamie, of course, for joining us. I want to thank his friends, NelsonLandServices.com. He and Kimby's good friends, just a tremendous family, the Nelson family there. They're so involved in amateur hockey. They do so much to support it, and just great people. 5-star locally rated company. All they're really asking, guys, is for you to check out NelsonLandServices.com if you need some work done, and give them an opportunity. And I think if you check out NelsonLandServices.com, you'll say, you know what, I'm going to give them a call because it's obvious the quality work that they do. And they're just great people. So we'd love you to give them an opportunity. Adam Smokehouse, same way. They are closed on Mondays, but Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays are open until 7 o'clock. They're delivering now into certain area codes. You can call over and find out. Holidays are here. They're really busy, but you can give them a call and see if they can fit you in for some catering. Nothing better than showing up for an event and having some Adam Smokehouse. Located on Watson Road, and again, the best barbecue in St. Louis, hands down, in my personal opinion. Special thanks one last time to Randy Green and the whole gang over at InnovativeCompanies.com. We want to wish them a happy holiday for sure. It's very rare to find people anymore, folks, when they shake your hand, look you in the eye, and tell you they're going to do something, you can count on it. And that's Randy Green with InnovativeCompanies.com. Want to encourage everybody to check us out at BluesNHLPodcast.com. Subscribe to the show. It's free. You can listen to the show there. You can also do your shopping on Amazon for Christmas. It would help us immensely. We would love it. It helps our producers, Brian Crock and Andrew Allen. More importantly, find us on social media at STL Blues Podcast on Twitter. If you're a Blues fan and you follow us, we're going to follow you back. Find us on Facebook. Type in Blues NHL Podcast. Like our Facebook page. Click invite your friends. Invite all your friends that are Blues fans to like our page as well. We'd appreciate it. Mondays and Thursdays typically is when we do the show. It's usually pinned up by 5 o'clock, pinned post. We're going to ask you to like that post, throw a little comment on it, and more importantly, share it. That helps us reach more fans and invite more fans in. It means a lot to us, and we'll be giving away some stuff throughout the season to say thank you for that as well. Blues NHL Podcast on Instagram. You can find us there, and as also a part of lineupmedia.fm. Quality company with great podcasts, but now home to the streaming platform, Yo Radio. Download it for free on your mobile app today. Again, I want to thank Jamie for joining us, and I look forward to having Mr. Kimble in studio or Mr. Kimble on the studio line on Thursday, as he will be working, and hopefully he can get a little break and join us. But Jamie will be here for all of us here at Blues NHL Podcast. Let's go Blues!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.